on, Norsterkenius.
That was like sexy tire.
Wow, that was definitely geeked out.
My lord! American Marketer, Border Turkle, that bastard.
Bees!
Boom, wink.
The Finnish Conspiracy.
Some guy was going on and on about Corsi this, Corsi that.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Coffee does make you poop, so.
Brodziak, Brodziak, Brodziak.
Do not bob at me, Kenny. Do not bob at me.
It's a love affair.
And welcome to episode 98 of Three in the Box, your Underground Wild podcast. This episode is being recorded Sunday, March 27th, 2016. This is Aaron, and in this episode we talk about winning, winning, winning. In the studio with me is Kenny.
What up?
And calling in remote from Houston, Texas is Jive.
Good evening.
Yeah! Woo!
I figured it was only fitting, you know. I was actually imagining the rich Texan from The Simpsons going, "Yeehaw!" And in a three in the box first, we've got two people calling in remote. Our guest this week calling in from BFE, Wisconsin, friend of the show, Derek Felska. How you doing?
Daily Odley, everybody. You know, it's kind of ironic. I was actually in Houston, Minnesota all weekend.
Nice.
What are the chances?
Yeah. So and how warm was it there, though?
Same it is here. I guess it was high 30s, low 40s.
Ooh. I'll just say I was sitting by poolside today in about 80-degree weather down here. So not rubbing it in or anything.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shut up!
80 degrees on Easter, yeah, must be rough.
or it was.
Or as we posted, Zombie Jesus Day, which I think Kenny was a little worried about because his co-workers at the church, and I will take full responsibility for posting the Zombie Jesus. Kenny had nothing to do with that, if any of his co-workers are listening.
It's time for good double time.
Don't want to get him in trouble here. You know, but before we get too far into things, I'd like to remind you can follow us on Twitter at Three in the Box. So let's talk some wild here.
So good week for the Wild, 3 wins. We get a 2-1 win over the Kings, a 6-2 win over Calgary, and another shutout against Colorado. So
woo-woo!
pretty good week for the Wild. So the Kings game, I mean, Wild steal a win. Dubnyk was absolutely amazing with 38 saves. The Wild were outshot 42-16. Quite ugly from that standpoint. After the game, Torch said that the Wild needed to battle more, less stick checks, and more take in the body. Is this team capable of playing a more physical game? Let's start with Jive.
As far as physicality, I mean, I don't think that the current build of the team or the fire of the current team is necessarily the right chemistry for that. Not to say that hopefully I don't hope to see some of that in the future.
What do you think, Derek?
I don't think physicality is a strategy that will work too well for them, especially against a team like, you know, as they were playing against the Kings, who were, you know, play a heavy game. I think what we found out, especially like against Colorado, I mean, if they stick to finesse when teams get physical, it's their way of really kind of fighting back in a way that they can fight back. Otherwise, they're just asking for trouble and asking for people to get hurt.
And it's rare that you got a plethora of guys that have both physicality and speed and finesse. I mean, you're talking guys like Ovechkin. You know, so the fact that the Wild are basically fighting a different battle, it kind of works to their advantage. It's a little more difficult when you're facing, you know, Colorado and they're just trying to grind you to the ground. But as long as you can outlast them, things will work out.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see this as a physical team. I've been fighting for them to get some more physical players, and you'll see spouts of it throughout the season, but overall, I mean, it seems like a skill that they'll pick up for like a game or two, and then it'll just kind of fly underneath the radar again.
Well, in this time of year, you know, as you know, we come down to the final stretch here, heading into the playoffs. You know, that playoff brand of hockey does require a little bit more physical play. So, you know, hopefully everybody's ready to step up their game.
Oh yeah, and go ahead, Derek.
Well, I guess if I, you know, it doesn't, to me, physicality for the Minnesota Wild does not necessarily mean that they have to try to out-hit the other team in terms of trying to be a punishing, almost intimidating style of play. It's really about being willing to take the hit in some cases where, like we saw, especially like against Colorado and Calgary, they were stepping and putting their shoulders down to seal guys off of pucks. And that's not really delivering hits as much as it is being willing to take the physical abuse to make a play and to move the puck. And that's their way of being physical.
Yeah, taking the body. Well, but then you also have to look at Dumba's hit. I mean,
no question. And he certainly sent a message to Chicago there.
Yep. They'll think twice when they're coming through our neutral zone now.
So next game that the Wild played, Calgary, and I mean, we got to see the return of Nicklas Backstrom. You know, the Wild honors him. Pomek and Vanek return as well. Parise gets a hat trick in the first period, natural hat trick. You know, it's his third of the season. Spurgeon gets a pair. You know, it was nice seeing Backstrom play again, but I don't know if I'm glad he didn't give up six goals when he played for the Wild.
Well, you know, he's helping the Wild win once again, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, go ahead.
Maybe it was all a conspiracy.
Well,
so they could get one win in there.
Well, and you know, Backstrom does have the pine trees and the Wild star on his helmet. They're very hidden. The pine trees are very obvious, but the star from like the Wild logo is kind of hidden in there. And me and Kenny caught it during the game, and I was like, "Wow, that's kind of awesome, actually."
Well, I mean, I'm kind of curious, you know, how much did Parise bribe Backstrom to allow him to get a hattie? I mean, or better yet, what about Spurgeon with a pair?
None.
I don't know, but I did also hear a report that it was 93X's claiming that it was their doing that earned Parise the Zach trick.
The Zach trick?
Oh no. We're not going to call it the Zach trick now, are we?
Oh, it's better than the Ovech trick.
No, Ovech trick is pretty awesome.
Ovech trick is awesome.
are you saying that Parise's hat trick was not very impressive? All in one period? What do they call that? Natural? Right?
But it was against Backstrom. So there is that kind of look.
Well, he's a veteran NHL goalie.
This is true. But he's also an aging NHL goalie, right?
May have been part of a conspiracy, but that's okay.
Well, Derek, any thoughts on how much he got bribed?
I don't know if he got bribed, but I would say that he was an aging goalie that was making his second start in about a year. And I don't know. I think maybe the game.
He has faced a lot of shots from Wild players, though, you know, in practices at least, right? So, because that's about all he's been doing for the last year and a half.
Yeah, but don't you think some of the emotions have to get to him a little bit? I mean, you know, I noticed one of the things I tweeted about during the game was that, you know, they put that video tribute on after the second goal pretty quick because it looked as though he wasn't able to stop a beach ball at that point. And they probably thought he was going to get pulled. I was almost surprised he didn't because really Calgary just didn't have a chance because he was giving them up so soon, so fast.
Well, and actually, Derek, this is a question that I want to ask you that you had kind of asked us. You know, the Wild fans you know, they're kind of known for razzing the opposing goalies who are playing like sieves, but is Razin backs on his first regular season game at the X an a-hole move?
For me personally, I guess I don't necessarily have a lot of great feelings for him. So I think it was somewhat fair based on his performance. But yeah, you know, you hold the tribute to the guy, and then basically that's just about the equivalent of a boo, or at the very least a taunt. And you know, we didn't boo Modano after we gave him his tribute. So I guess kind of a dick's move on our part.
Good point, Aaron. Thoughts?
You know, at one point I go, yeah, it's kind of a jerk move. But at the same point, you know what? Why should we do anything different for him? I mean, just because he's still in the league. I mean, if this was, you know, 6 years ago or however long ago it was, I mean, and it was Rolison that gave up 6 goals, we would probably be razzing him too. Why is Backstrom any different at that point? He's won a lot of games to the Wild. He's won a lot of unimportant games for the Wild as well, because some of those years were pretty lean years for the Wild. But at the same point, I don't know. I guess I'm not going to get too worked up about it because, you know, he gave up a ton of goals. What I thought was weird, and I think Derek, you know, that's a good point about, you know, it was right after the second goal, is, you know, they showed that whole video montage, and it was when the Wild were in the offensive zone. So it kind of like actually, I don't know if it contributed, but it may have thrown Backstrom off a little because it's like, okay, he's got to be in the mindset of stopping pucks right away here, and they're playing a video, and fans are cheering for him. If anything, I thought that was kind of a jerk move by the Wild to do it when they were in the offensive zone rather than a neutral zone or a defensive zone thing. It was kind of weird, I thought. I don't know.
Jive, yeah, any thoughts? Go ahead, Derek.
I was going to say, yeah, you're right. It's kind of a bit of a mind screw to him. You know, hey, you're feeling good now? Don't think about stopping pucks anymore. And that was probably not a great decision by Game Ops, but probably I think they're thinking that he was probably going to get pulled and they wanted him to at least be on the ice when he saw it, as opposed to sitting on the bench.
And then a single tear runs down his cheek when he's sitting on the bench.
It's like the crying Indian with the waste on the side of the people littering on the side of the road.
So I do have a question for you guys, though, then, on that. Every time that we travel to Nashville and play against the Predators, and we continue to hear the Boo Birds come out for Suter, I mean, should we treat Backstrom similar to that, or are we a little bit more classy than that around here?
Well, you know, Backstrom didn't want to leave. The only reason he wanted to leave is because he wanted to play. So I think it's a little bit different situation. But that hasn't stopped Wild fans in the past, or Minnesota fans in the past. You know, we boo AJ Persinski, even though the Twins traded him away.
But Persinski's a jackass anyway.
Well, there is that. But, you know, it's I don't know that Wild fans or Minnesota fans are above it. But I don't think they will, because the circumstances are a little different.
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, Aaron, I agree. It's two different situations. They weren't booing Backstrom when he stepped on the ice. They were razzing him because he gave up goals and taunting him. It's not like Nashville, where every time Suter touches the puck, it's an instant boo. It was razzing him based on his performance.
Well, I guess I would just add that there's a little bit of context. Like, just before Suter left Nashville, he said he didn't want to really play any other place. So for the Predators fans, they saw his defection to Minnesota as pretty much out-and-out betrayal. So there's a little bit of a reason for them to boo. I'm not saying that they should hold on to it for 4-plus seasons, but that's it's kind of based on something he said, kind of like what Bertuzzi said to us. We held on to that for years, and every time he touched the puck, I think for even 5 years after he originally said it in the 2003 playoffs, we kept booing all the time. So I don't think we're that much better, although we don't do a you suck chant for the goalie.
Well, you know, in New Jersey, they're still booing Parisi. I mean, it's been just as many years, so it just happens that we face them less during a season than we do Nashville, right?
Yep.
And again,
so what you're saying is that fans need to advance here and get with the program, because these days it's about business. It's not about any sort of loyalty to a team or anything.
It always kind of has been, though. I mean, like, you don't see very many franchise players anymore. So, I mean, it is going to be kind of business. But, Derek, like you said, with Bertuzzi, again, that was a different situation where he basically tomahawked a guy, you know, in the back of his head that took him out. I mean, he deserves to get booed. You know, Parisi or Suter just touching the puck, you know, that's just because they're considered a turncoat, not because they did anything goonish.
Or Vanek in New York when we play the Islanders. It's like, okay, I mean, this is getting old. I mean, I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
I don't think the Wild really boo any player that has left. Gabrick, when he left, I don't think ever got booed when he came back onto the ice. It's the fans, I think, they're booing people that, A, are either like goonish or have done something physically to harm a Wild player, or like Backstrom, poor performance.
Well, and there is the, if you remember the, you suck.
There was that.
Yeah, you know, we had that for a while too. So, Wild fans are not above a good, you know, it's not a boo, but it's basically the equivalent of a boo.
We're not class.
We're not that classy. I mean, come on, it's hockey, right?
Speaking of classy, I mean, those Nashville fans have some real classy people.
Well, speaking of classy, the Colorado fans.
Oh, the Colorado fans. So our third game this week, another shutout for the Wild against Colorado. You know, a very physical first. Avs unraveled after that. Parisi with two goals. You know, he got five in two games. Wah, he pulled Varlamov with over 10 minutes left in the third.
Insane.
Yeah, absolutely. Insane. And then Varley does a line change. I mean, which, his skates really aren't meant for speed.
And it just adds to the insanity of the game that was yesterday.
So, and then we get the loudest Let's Go Wild and Dubs and the Posing House, which was absolutely crazy. And we're at a five-game winning streak, which is the longest of the year. So, with that, you know, the Wild take the Avs this season 4-0-1, including two shutouts. We got four empty net goals, two of them in one game. Parisi alone has eight goals, one assist, and a hattie against Colorado. I mean, how much does Wah hate this team right now? Derek?
I would say, and I think you can see it with the way the Avalanche play the Wild, is that we are their nemesis. We are their quote-unquote Chicago. And they, I think, honestly, that's a season focus every year. I mean, we even heard 2-3 years ago, Eric Johnson was talking crap about the Wild before the season. He just says, I hate that team. And what is the first thing he does in this game? He goes right after Parisi on the very first shift. I think it's a culture that they think brings out their best, and we just do a great job of turning it against them.
Johnson's a turncoat anyway, so he can go suck a fat one.
Speaking of turncoats.
We should boo him.
Absolutely. If we're going to pick any player to boo anytime they touch the puck or step on the ice, I think Johnson's a good one.
And he'd be one of those players where I don't ever want the Wild to sign him. He may be a Minnesotan by birth, but screw
not
that.
Anymore. No. Not by right. He lost that privilege a long time ago.
His Minnesotan citizenship has been revoked.
We need a stamp sample.
Thunk.
You say it may be, he may be a Minnesotan. If are you saying like this is similar to like you may be a redneck if. Are there certain qualifications that you have to meet to be a Minnesotan?
Gotta like hot dish.
Yeah, yes. You betcha.
You gotta like
you hot betcha dish. There is. Don't you know?
Ooh, what? That is a good. That is actually a great question. What makes you a Minnesotan? What would be on the citizenship test for Minnesota?
Hot dish. I think Felska got it right there with hot dish.
Hot dish. That's the first one.
And you call it casserole, you're automatically out. What?
Yeah, you don't want to come over for a casserole?
You, no.
Get out. Get out, out now.
Revoke.
I'm already out.
I would say you have to have a level of passive aggressiveness. And I'd also say that you have to have some kind of Scandinavian or Lutheran guilt towards anything. Where you just kind of you project shame at people for being too bragging too much. That's a Minnesotan kind of thing.
You drink pop, not know. Soda.
That's right, pop. It's a another one was that you if you ever get offered dessert, to be a proper Minnesotan, you have to say no three times before you grudgingly accept it.
I don't know how many of you have seen the How to Speak Minnesotan. It was like
that's exactly where it's from.
And Derek, you had me thinking about that because there's also the long Minnesota goodbye, where you
I do that all the time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where you can't leave right away. You have to like drag it out over a few hours.
Yeah,
right.
We all feel that. If you're a Minnesotan, you definitely feel that.
Yeah,
I was leaving at 10. here it is, 3 o'clock in the morning. Now.
So, Jive, you are totally Minnesotan. Is this why you're always late?
That's a great possibility, actually.
The Jive time is actually a Minnesota thing.
Yeah,
Jive. I just can't. Yeah, buy.
Did you know Jive's in Houston to see the Arrows play? He's just a little late.
How's Eric Westrum looking? Huh? How's Eric Westrum?
Awesome. Looking great this back then.
There's a great head coach down there. I hear his name is Mike Yo.
Maybe he'll get called up one of these days.
I'm thinking that he's a great prospect to be a Wild coach, yes.
So with this winning streak we have going on, how long is this torch going to continue to burn?
Do we think? Are you saying his torch going to be here next year?
Maybe.
I don't know. What do you think, Derek?
I think it'll be really, really tough to say goodbye to him if the team... if the team makes the playoffs. I just think the organization will see that as a huge win considering where the team was at. And unless we look like a complete train wreck in the postseason, I think they'll have a hard time saying he didn't work out.
Well,
yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, if he does well in the playoffs, assuming we make the playoffs, I think that, you know, they'll definitely have a hard time saying goodbye to that. And, you know, I don't think that he should get like full credit for a team having made a full, you know, 180 degree turn. I think that the team was definitely probably ready to turn things around itself anyways. I think that likewise, those things would have happened with Yo in the place. But, you know, if Torch can prove that, you know, he can move into the playoffs and have some success, I definitely think that he's gonna get more than one look at being the head coach again next year.
Well, and I think, you know, the the funny thing is what coincides with this big turnaround is Dubnyk is playing really well as of late. And I know Russo tweets it like seems like pretty constantly about how well Dubnyk has been doing since, you know, February 28th. He's only got like one regulation loss, and that was that, and it wasn't even that one where he was blown out and he got pulled, and then Kemper came in and gave up more goals.
That was Buffalo, wasn't it?
No, it was Felska knows.
That's New Jersey.
New Jersey, yes.
I knew Felska would know, so. But yeah, it was that game, and that was Kemper's loss because the Wild scored three goals and ended up catching up a little bit there.
Just look at what Dubnyk did against L.A. with some of those amazing saves. I mean, that should have been a 6-1 loss on the Wild, or a 6-2 loss.
You know, when Dubnyk's on, he's on, and right now I think he's kind of on. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think, Derek?
Well, I would say that the one thing I look for in Dubnyk when he's playing well, or actually two things. One, how well he's seeing the puck through, especially traffic near his crease. He seems to just be able to be in the right position. He doesn't look like he's hoping and reaching for pucks. And the second thing is rebound control. And he seems to be able to absorb rebounds even with traffic nearby. And that makes all the difference in the world in close hockey games.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you there, Derek. And I mean, Dubnyk, I mean, obviously right now we're seeing him. What we're getting out of him is he's making those saves that a team needs to, you know, keep them in the game after, you know, somebody makes an errant pass or a bad turnover. And, I mean, he's coming up with those big saves and saving the day, basically. But, you know, there's ups and downs, and I'm glad that he's on an upward stride right now, so... This is definitely the time of year when you want to be peaking and having that performance show through.
Well, and I think you know, the part of the thing with Dubnyk is that you know, he's also a victim to how well the defense is playing in front of him, and we saw that with Backstrom. I mean, part of Backstrom's problem was when we played Calgary is that. His defense was absent for a lot of those goals. So, I mean, he let in some normal Backstrom goals, but some of them where he was just basically left out to dry. And we've seen that with Dubnyk, is that when his team is playing like garbage in front of him, he's going to let in goals. And that's kind of been the MO for the Wild for the longest time, is that, you know, the way this team plays defensively kind of elevates a goalie. Maybe unnecessarily, because basically what I'm trying to say is that the goalie isn't that great because of the defensive style that we play. And I think there's a little bit of truth to that with Dubnyk, but he's playing very well right now.
And especially in that LA game, I mean, allowing that many shots on him is not a good thing, but the fact that he was seeing most of those shots in LA, which I think helped with a lot of those saves that he had. So, all right, you guys had briefly brought up playoffs. The Wild have played one more game than the Avs and are up on them by 5 points. They've got 6 games left. Do the Wild make the playoffs? Currently right now, you know, they've got 85 points, 6 games remaining. You know, what do you guys think, Derek?
I think they do. As long as they can stay focused and keep it one game at a time, and just work on the games in front of them instead of worrying about the playoffs themselves, I think they'll get it done. You know, my only fear is that, you know, you get that big win, you know, which, let's face it, the whole league was talking about the Wild Avalanche showdown. You get the big win decisively, and now how do you answer from that? Do you continue to go, or do you just try to coast? And they don't have room to coast, just like Torchetti said at the end of the game.
Yeah, there's definitely no room for error in there. And, I mean, they still need to approach, yes, every single game the rest of the season as if it were a playoff game.
And I personally think, you know, the way things are playing out, obviously the Avs have a much harder schedule than the Wild do right now. For the remaining part of the season, I think they're facing all playoff bound teams. In the Wild, I think just only
the Wild's remaining teams are half Canadian, which they're not doing too hot this year.
I think the Blackhawks are the only remaining team that the Wild face that are playoff bound or likely playoff bound at this point. So the Wild have an easier schedule, which is, you know, but the Wild haven't done very well against these teams that they should be beating either. So who knows how that'll go. I think the Wild, there's one thing you can say about the Wild, even when they're good or they're bad, is that they beat Wah time and time again. I think there's going to be another case where the Wild
that goes back to when Wah was in net.
Right. Wah will lose to the Wild, and I don't know. I'm sure Wah hates the Wild at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think had the Wild lost to Colorado, I think we'd be looking at a little bit different, dire situation. But, I mean, having a little bit of a buffer right now, I think they're going to coast in. You know, maybe even potentially if Nashville takes a slide, but, you know, they've been doing pretty good right now.
So, go. So the one thing that Kenny did bring up was while pulling Varlamov with over 10 minutes left. I just kind of want to gauge what you guys' thoughts are on this.
Did you see that ludicrous display last night?
Derek, what do you think about the whole... That seems awfully early, but I mean, what are you thinking? Down 3 points, 10 minutes left in the game.
I think he realized he had a pretty lifeless squad at that point. The Avalanche, after giving up those goals in the second, really seemed kind of crushed emotionally, and I think at that point he was hoping that somehow a goal would spark his team, and that, you know, when they tried that first time and they did the little switcheroo, you know, where they brought Varlamov back on a line change, which I had never seen before in all my time watching hockey. I think they felt that they were flirting with a goal, and he thought he could take a risk with the power play and get it done, but it only served to backfire. And I think some of it, I don't know, I wrote this on Twitter too, that I think it's a little bit of arrogance. He thinks that those guys are potent enough that they can score on anybody, and I don't know, the Wild have had their number when they've done that trick.
I think that we might be seeing the start of a new revolution, goalie pulling. Basically, you know, you've seen it kind of spread as some of the other teams have been picking up on this, and I think we even saw it something in the high school ranks this year, in the high school state hockey tournament, where, you know, coaches are starting to pull their goalies maybe a little bit sooner than later. And, you know, so maybe we're just seeing a complete revolution here. Maybe pretty soon we won't even be seeing a goalie in the net. In the
first It'll just be 6-on-6 hockey.
It'll be like pond hockey.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Wah's nuts, and I mean, I think, you know, he was a goalie, so I think he's going to take a little bit more chances with his goalie situation, just playing that position. But I don't see that. I think this is just a short trend. Hopefully, you know, kind of like Kanye West, that it just dies out soon.
Yeah, that's not working out so well with Kanye.
Well, is bankrupt, apparently.
Allegedly.
How about the thought, though, of like a hybrid goalie who comes up, he's going to be like a third defenseman on the blue line when you're in the offensive zone. You can move the puck around. You can, you know, force the play a little bit more. And when you've got guys coming back, you simply got a guy who slides back into the goalie position.
So you mean like Suter, right?
Yeah.
Well,
except for he doesn't even slide; he just glides.
You know, they are talking about making the goalie pad smaller again.
Right.
It might, Jive. It might not be the craziest thing you've ever said.
Close to it.
Oh, it's not the craziest.
Well, you know, there's some there's some real math nerds out there that will say that, you know, when you're down 3-0, I read this on Reddit, so take it with a grain of salt. But when you're down 3-0, you actually should start pulling your goalie about midway through the second, because statistically, when you're down 3-0, your odds of winning the game are very, very slim. So, and when if you think about it, you can't argue with it. I mean, it's the truth. So maybe why isn't as crazy as we think, you know?
Balls on the table.
Balls on the table.
Nobody else has the balls to do it, that's all.
Right.
Well, speaking of stuff on tables.
Yes, people were signing things on tables. We had a bunch of amateur signings here. The big one was Mario Lucia after Notre Dame got knocked out. He signed a 2-year entry-level contract to start next season, so he'll have 2 seasons after this one. He'll play Iowa's last few games on an amateur tryout. He had 110 points in 151 games over 4 years at Notre Dame. He's the second round pick in 2011. I think we traded a third and a fourth round that season to get that pick. It was near the end of the second, so it was a late second pick. You know, not many players drafted after Lucia have really played significant time in the NHL. You got a few guys like Peugeot with Ottawa. He was a third rounder. You had Johnny Hockey's a fourth rounder. Andrew Shaw, which we're way too familiar with, he was a fifth rounder. And Andre Palat, it was a seventh rounder. That about sums up the guys who have had significant time in the NHL after him. But I think most would consider his senior year to be kind of a bust after he led the team in scoring in his junior year at Notre Dame. So do we think he'll become an impact player for the Wild? Derek, what do you think?
I don't think so. The main reason is just watching him is I have some severe concerns about his skating, mostly kind of his lack of acceleration. And he just doesn't seem to get up to speed real quickly. And also the fact that he isn't all that versatile a player. He's kind of a top six or bust kind of player. If you put him in a third or fourth line role as a checker, I do not think he would do very well. So you have kind of an offensively gifted player who has a skating issue, and that to me is like Zach Phillips, and we all know what happened with Zach Phillips. We got rid of him because it just wasn't going to work out. That's how I see it, unfortunately.
Is that something, though, that like a decent skating coach could maybe work out of him?
Potentially, although you would think a player, you know, in this day and age, everything is analyzed so tremendously, especially with your dad being the coach of a major Division I program. I would think that he is already, you know, if he saw that as a major problem, he would probably have been working on it the entire time. And one thing I guess I can say as a high school coach is it's just speed is something in many cases you really can't teach. A kid's either fast or he's not. Because if all of us just had to work a little harder to become fast, we all would have done that.
Right. Well, and
sometimes a little technique, though, doesn't hurt.
True.
It kind of worked for Vanek at the beginning of the season.
But it didn't make him faster. It just made him skate less stupid is really what it comes down to, right?
Sure.
You know, what I really wonder is how much going to Notre Dame actually hurt him. You know, would he have done better had he stayed home and played for his dad? You know,
Or even a rival Minnesota team. Because, I mean, now U of M wouldn't have been, well, at least for part of his career, wouldn't have been an opponent because they would have been in a different division.
True.
Well, one of the interesting things...
Go ahead, Derek.
I was going to say one of the interesting things about Lucia, especially his senior year, is the fact that Notre Dame is a defensive-minded team. In Hockey East, which is kind of known more for being more a little more wide open. And the Fighting Irish are a defensive team, and he was a minus player, which, you know, if you're being a defensive team, you would think that, you know, he would probably be more on the positive side, and he wasn't this year, I think for the first time in all of his college career.
Well, and they made it farther than the Gophers did, at least, you know, making the bracket.
Yeah, I think they played a little bit softer non-conference schedule than we did, but we have to because the Big Ten's awful.
This is true.
Yeah.
Why do they even still call it the Big Ten anyways? It'd be like the little 13, 14.
Well, for hockey, it'll be the Big Seven.
Big Seven.
Now that Notre Dame's added.
Is Notre Dame Big Ten?
Yeah, they made the announcement this weekend.
Oh, really?
Wow. That they're going to the Big Ten.
So is that going to be for football also?
Nope, just for hockey.
Really?
Yep.
How ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, then I think the Gophers should opt out of that and go back to WCHA. if an independent can join the Big Ten, I think a Big Ten can leave the Big Ten and go back to WCHA.
Well, does the MAC have a hockey conference?
This is true. Let's just get Penn State out of there again.
So the other big signing this week was Nick Seeler. He signed another 2-year entry level contract starting next season. He had 10 assists over, and he was a plus 21 over 36 games in his junior season at the U. He also, if you remember, he played two seasons with University of Nebraska at Omaha, and then took a redshirt year. He's viewed as a shutdown defender, and you know, by all accounts, he's a defensive defenseman. I think it really asks the question, though: do we need another D that is not capable two ways? Considering the way this team works right now, where we have a defenseman kind of moving into the offensive zone on occasion, do we need another guy like a Suter-ish kind of guy?
Derek? I think he's the one element that he does have that overall our defensive core doesn't have is he's physical. I would say he's feisty physical. I know Hockey Wilderness, and Tony Wiseau said that he's basically the next Nate Prosser, and I don't necessarily think that's entirely. I don't know if that's way out of line, because they do kind of have a similar kind of game in the sense that they try to push around after the whistle and things like that. You know, I think there are moments where we've shown where we could use a guy that's a little more physical. I don't know if Seeler really has an NHL talent level. I think he could be a nice farmhand, but I'm kind of, I don't know, I guess I'm skeptical about his NHL ability.
Well, we were just talking about, you know, the Wild needs some physicality. Is he going to be the guy to bring that up? And I mean, Derek, I think you kind of answered part of that question.
Well, I mean, we are pretty vanilla. I mean, we don't really. The only guy that we have on our defensive core that seems to have any real, I think, physical punishment aspect is Scandella consistently. Dumba can throw an open ice hit once in a while, but we don't see him get kind of mean at least along the wall. Well, Dumba, and that's where Seeler kind of plays.
Dumba does it to guys that count, like, you know, the rapist.
Well,
alleged.
And like,
and with that smile he's always got on his face, how's he gonna be mean?
Well, and like you said, you know, or like Tony said, that Prosser, he's kind of like that. You could also say that you know, before him, Stoner was a lot like that. And we all saw the contract that Anaheim was tripping over themselves to give to Stoner. So there's obviously some value of that kind of player in the NHL, right?
Yeah, there's always a market for a guy who will be that sandpaper defenseman. I mean, you got Brooks Orpik, Matt Green. I mean, those are guys with very limited upsides offensively, but they're miserable to play against, and that's probably what the Wild feel they have in Nick Seeler. I was a little surprised he decided to forego his senior year, but he probably felt, hey, I could get hurt and then there won't be a contract for me, so might as well get out while the getting's good.
Right on. Well, you know, and still unknown is whether or not Boston College sophomore and our Wild's first-round pick from 2014, Alex Took, will go pro or not. It seems like Russo believes that it's going to be quite certain that he goes pro. But if so, does he have a spot on this Wild team?
I would say yes. He would be basically where David Jones is right now. And you could probably slot him in the, I think at very least in the top six, if not the top nine. He does play big, and uses his body very effectively, and he has great hands, so he'll fit in with your skilled guys rather effortlessly, and he can move. He's already got that NHL body that you want.
So you think he's already ready to just step right into the NHL ranks, NHL ready?
I'd say he's pretty close. I mean, I don't think his adjustment period will be as long as it would be for a smaller guy like it was for Granlund.
I don't know. I guess sometimes I have to think differently about that. There's a big difference between the two levels of play to me. In the amounts of games, how long, the length of the season, and how that can drag on a person's body. And when you have that, can you maintain that when it's not just on a weekend basis?
I think that's no doubt a concern. I would say that I would be more skeptical of Tuck if he was a junior league star where he's going against like 16 and 17 year old kids. But he's playing against, a lot of the Hockey East teams, have rosters where, most of the kids are 22, 23, 24, and he'll see a lot of those same kind of guys at the NHL level. So I think he's more physically prepared than probably a kid would be coming straight out of, like, major junior.
So I what I really wonder, and Derek, you might have a better answer for this, but if you're looking at a comparable kind of player, I see Tuck and I look at him and I think, he seems actually pretty comparable, from a guy who doesn't follow a whole lot of the college stuff. I think Tuck and I think he seems kind of to me like a lot like Coyle. Is that fair, or do you think he's a little bit better than that or worse than that?
I think there's an element of kind of like Coyle to him. I think he kind of reminds me more of like Hudson Fashing, because I think he's a little more active than Coyle was, at least when he started. So I think that you're getting a player that really understands kind of the where to be around the net, and he's a pretty good finisher. I think that part of it comes from him developing in the U.S. development program where he played with the best. He was on a line with Jack Eichel and Sonny Milano, and he knows where to be if you want to pot pucks in the net, and he definitely has the strength to get there.
Sweet. I think we've butted ourselves up against Twitter talk, so let's do that. So, first question comes from someone who might go by the name of @StateOfHockeyNews. I don't know who that might be.
Must be a moron.
Well, he said it, not us.
A.K.A.
That about sums it up.
Well, you got three of them on the other end, so right. You're in good company.
If you weren't catching that, that comes from Derek here. The question goes, with many college teams eliminated, GM Chuck Fletcher has signed free agents. What is the biggest organizational need, in your opinion? Kenny.
I'm going to, I think D, we're pretty well set on. I think what we need to do is figure out our top six and actually settle down with top six players that are going to be solid in performing. But yeah, I don't know, Aaron.
I'm thinking we need physical forwards. I think if there's one thing that we've struggled with is winning puck battles. And, a great example would be the LA game and how we dump it in and we'd lose the puck. Dump it in, lose the puck. Dump it in, lose the puck. We need some guys that have some battle to them on the, I want to pair a guy like that with our skilled guys So at least we have a chance to win some of those dump-ins. Because without being able to win some dump-ins, our zone entries will never survive. Derek, what do you think?
I guess the place that I think we need is goaltending. Not because I'm worried about Dubnyk or anything, but I do want some goaltenders in the pipeline because Kemper's history, at least medically speaking, with the upper body injuries, that this time he said it wasn't a concussion, but I don't know if I buy that, kind of worries me, and we don't have a lot of goalies in our pipeline anymore, and you never really can have too many, so I would like to see us maybe go after a guy like Alex Lyon from Yale, who was only like the best college goaltender this year, and I don't know, that's where I would go, start from the crease on out.
Jive, what are you thinking?
For me, I like your idea, Aaron, of finding some more physical talent. I mean, we consistently, on a yearly basis, find somebody to rent, basically, that can kind of fill that void. And I think that basically, as far as our top lines go, we need to just basically commit to something. And yes, then I think that, in my opinion, though, what we need is to fill in some of that depth, whether it's, a slightly more veteran player to fill in or play alongside a couple of younger players on those third and fourth lines.
All right, so our next question, and, Derek, you had kind of talked about this already, comes from State of Hockey, not State of Hockey, but State of Hockey, at Mini Puck 2027. What can we expect from Lucia next season? Jive, let's start with you on this one.
What can we expect from Lucia? Really, I think that it'll be a definite growing year for him. I don't know that we will see much of him as far as like a professional debut, even maybe. There's definitely some growing, I think, that still needs to be done there.
Derek, what are you thinking?
I guess for myself, since I have low expectations, I'd want to see him dominate in Iowa. I want to see a guy that probably in the top three in scoring in Iowa, and then I'd want to maybe give him a shot with the Wild, hopefully. So hopefully he proves me wrong and plays much better than what I think he will.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that I don't think he's going to spend significant time with the Wild, with the Big Wild. I think he's probably going to spend most of the year in Iowa, and he's going to have to prove himself. I don't think he's really proven himself in his senior year at Notre Dame, and he's going to have to show that he can operate on a smaller rink and with talent that isn't may not be great, And if he can do that, maybe we start giving him a chance.
And, yeah, I'm hoping to see him in one of the top six positions where, we can call him up when we need something like that. If he gets back to his scoring and playing like a top six forward, I think that's going to be his only hope, I think, with the Wild right now, with the Big Wild or Baby Wild, for that matter.
Next question comes from Tim McHugh, friend of the show, at Tim Nato on Twitter. In your opinion, is Torch doing the right thing with Zucker? Do you think the scratches will have an impact on his career? Derek, what are you thinking?
I think it does. The one thing, I guess, that is in the back of my mind with all this stuff is expansion draft. And at the beginning of the season, I would have said he was a player we definitely are going to protect. Now I'm not so sure. I think the scratches have been justified on the basis of playing smart and working the puck deep and doing some of the little things where Zucker's had a chance to go in the corners and he hasn't. And I think those are pretty legitimate gripes. And the thing I have to say to Zucker, if I had to talk to him, was when you're not scoring, you become pretty vulnerable to criticism. So you better be doing that, because Otherwise, your game looks a little bit ragged.
Jive.
Yeah, I would have to kind of agree with you there on that, Derek. And really, I think that it could, though, have a positive effect on Zucker's game and his career. The fact that, you know, maybe it does serve to him as a little bit of a wake-up call, you know, to tell him that, you know, hey, you know, putting the puck in the net, that's one thing. Digging in the corner, it's another piece of the game. And you need to bring all pieces of the game to the game in order to make your best contributions to the team. I mean, I know that we don't have a lot of like the big bruising physical players of olden days, and we don't have a lot of the super high finesse players that we had in previous days. Well, you know, so I think that everybody who's out on the ice needs to, you know, be all aspects of the game if they. Hopefully he just, you know, takes it as a learning experience forward from there.
All right.
Well, I was actually going to say that I almost wonder whether or not, you know, it seems to be Zucker or Vanek being scratched. I wonder if Zucker has got some other things that going on where not just on the ice stuff, but off the ice, whether or not, you know, the coaching staff is questioning his, you know, commitment to playing right now.
That could very well be.
So you think maybe they're questioning maybe some of his focus? I know he's kind of in the midst of a pretty intense relationship. At least that's what he posts to us a little bit. Do you think maybe that's become kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to say a distraction because, I mean, it's his life. But has that kind of become a bigger thing to him than worrying about where he's at on the team right now?
Well, it honestly doesn't matter that you're a hockey player or if you work in a gas station. If your off work things are interfering with your on work things, it's a distraction. And if that's the case, you know, I mean, it sucks for him. And it sucks for us because we have to watch it because we see when the guy is in the zone and making things happen. Right now, though, it doesn't look very good. I mean, he hasn't scored nearly as much as we would hope. You know, really, he's the kind of guy where you think his ceiling might be, you know, older Parisi level, but we're not getting anywhere near that right now.
No, we're not. I don't think his hands are quite there, unfortunately. Playoff question coming from Ty Sandstrom at Ty Sands 42. Who do the Wild draw in the first round, and can they pass Nashville or Chicago? Aaron.
Ooh. Actually, I'm gonna pass to Derek because I'm gonna wait a second here while I look up where the standings are sitting right now. To be honest.
This would be a great time for, like, Commons intermission music because I don't even know where the standings are.
Okay, I'll take this one then.
Great, thank you. Sorry.
So yep. Right now we're looking at Dallas and St. Louis both sitting with 99 points leading to the conference. So more than likely the Wild's probably going to draw one of them. You know, we took St. Louis first round last year. We played pretty strong, or second round, first round last year.
First round, yeah.
First round. And we played a solid game against them, and I think we can handle St. Louis in the playoffs again. They are a very physical team, but I think we can adjust to their style of play and basically by not letting them get under our skin, it gets under their skin that much more. So I think mentally and physically we can cope with St. Louis. Dallas I'm a little worried about because, I mean, we've always had a tough time playing Dallas, especially in Dallas, and I could see it almost being like a Chicago thing where, you know, we're going to have a tough time getting past them in the playoffs. As far as Chicago and Nashville, We'll see what happens with Chicago this upcoming game, but we've had Chicago's numbers so far this year. They're not the same team that they used to be.
And Chicago's 4 points down from Dallas and St. Louis, and Nashville's, you know, 6 points up from us.
6 points down. Oh, unless there's a change in the wins.
Nashville's six up from us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if the season were to end today, you know, that loaded statement, the Wild would be playing either St. Louis or Dallas. And I have to agree with Kenny. I would much prefer St. Louis over Dallas because Dallas has owned us this year, and they've owned us at home. They've owned us. I mean, Dallas has been a great team this year, even not even.
That's because they got half of the Chicago players that kept beating us.
Derek, so I'll pass it off to you now officially. What are you thinking, Dallas or St. Louis?
Well, I would agree with Kenny in about 90% of it, in the sense that I think St. Louis is a matchup I would welcome, as much as you can want to welcome a team that's dirty and cheap. But at the same time, I guess
you suck.
The one saving grace we have with Dallas, I guess, is we don't have to worry about 3-on-3 overtime in the playoffs, which is where I think we looked especially bad against Dallas. But yeah, they're a very dangerous team. Very potent offensively. Sagan, Ben, and Klingberg should be in almost every Wild player's nightmares this season. And you know, I think they're built very in a way that makes it tough for us to play our game, because we're at our best when we play fast, and I think they're even faster. So I think that would be a matchup problem for us, especially, you know, thinking of Mike Riley out there against Ben and Sagan is just scary to me.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is definitely the team that basically nobody really wants to play. Everybody knows that St. Louis is good, but they are beatable. Obviously, still a battle for the top of the division, but really, the team I think that everybody pretty much sees to beat this year, just by what's been thrown on the ice, is definitely Dallas. That said, I fully agree with everybody else. Hopefully it's St. Louis. But if it is Dallas, what better way to start off the playoffs than, you know, beating up a team like that to get you confidence? Because if you could manage to squeak out a few wins and you know, maybe take it to six or seven games and come out on top somehow, sky's the limit then. What a way to start. And I don't think you'd have any worries about it, you know, much after that.
Well, before we get to the playoffs, why don't we talk about the four games we have coming up? So, one of the teams that we were just talking about, we have the Blackhawks coming up on Tuesday here. We also have the Senators coming here on Thursday. Friday, we are flying out to Detroit, the Troilet. I hate that city. So we got back-to-backs. And then Sunday, we are in Winnipeg playing against the Jets. So with that, I'm taking the game of the week this week, and I'm taking the Blackhawks game because, I mean, it's going to be a division rival. It's going to be a possible sweep on the season of Chicago.
And it's going to be a big game, both for the Wild and for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, because the Blackhawks are going to want to try to keep one of those top three spots right now, too. So, with that, Aaron, who are you picking on this game?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be a close game. I'm going to go with the Wild winning. I don't know how the Wild just own the Blackhawks during the regular season and then struggle during the postseason. It works out that way. But I think the Wild are going to have their number, and Wild win 3-2. Derek, what are you thinking?
I'm going to say the Wild win 4-2. I think part of it is the reason we've had so much better success against Chicago is if you look at their defensive core, they really drop off after you get past Keith, Seabrook, and Chalmerson. After that, it's like, who the hell's up back there? And that's really kind of what's been their Achilles heel. And if Crawford's not there, I think we win maybe 5-1.
Jive, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that Dubnyk is going to continue his hot streak here as the Blackhawks roll in, and that we're actually going to shut the Blackhawks out. We're going to keep Kane the Rapist off the board, and we're going to win 3-0.
Kenny.
All right, and I'm going to go with the Wild winning 4-1. I think Dubnyk's going to be solid. I think there's going to be a fluke, whether it comes off of Suter's skate or Spurgeon's stick. But I'm going to go with a 4-1 Wild victory.
All right. It's a quorum here. And I think this is an episode, actually. So, you know, when I'm not live tweeting Wild games with 3 in the box, and again, that's at 3 in the box on Twitter, you can find links to everything that I'm doing at about.me/TheAaron. Derek, where can people find you and what you're doing?
You can find me at stateofhockeynews.com. That is StateHockeyNews.com. Or you can find me at stateofhockeynews on Twitter. I tweet a lot.
He does. They're great tweets. You should follow him.
Yeah, I think you're... I was looking today, and you're almost up to 40,000 tweets, I think is what I'm
saying. A lot of retweets, but yeah, a lot of them.
Kenny, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at NostraKenius or at about.me/IamKenny. That is KENNEY with links to Twitter, Instagram, and all that other fun jazz.
Jive, when you're not in Texas, where can people find you?
I'm not going to tell you where you can find me, but I may not have a lot of tweets, but I do like treats, so treats are always welcome. But anyways, if you need to know anything else about me, you can go to about.me/HeyJive. And I think that's a wrap.
All right.
All right.